welcome to this edition of Dive Deep Interview and No More Perfect Date Night. We are Mark and Jill Savage, and we are so excited to have Greg and Lynn McDonald joining us. Welcome, Greg and Lynn.
Good evening.
Hi.
We are so glad to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Well, Greg and Lynn are the authors of a book called Embracing the Journey, and they're going to share a little bit about that book. But Greg and Lynn, tell us just a little bit about yourselves, your family, where do you live, what do, that kind of a thing.
Sure.
Greg and I have been married for 42 years.
42 years?
Gosh.
You guys had to be like 12.
Yeah.
Because you do not look like that.
And, oh goodness, we were high school sweethearts and got married, you know, right out of high school. And shortly after, started our family. We lived in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And raised our children for probably about 25, 27 years is where we lived there. So that's really what we really called home. And now we live in Atlanta, Georgia, and our children live here. We have a daughter who is 36 years old and a son who's 34. And our daughter is married and we have three grandchildren. And this is where we call home now. It's Atlanta, Georgia. Yep. We love it. Love the sunshine.
Good. Yeah, yeah, big difference from Grand Rapids, Michigan, especially in the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet you love that.
We do. It's a little warm right now, but that's okay. We'll take that warm.
We'll take the warm and the sunshine every day.
Yeah, absolutely.
No kidding. Yeah. Now, you guys have a ministry. I believe it's called the same thing that your book is called, Embracing the Journey. Tell us a little bit about your ministry.
Yeah, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago, we formed the ministry. Primarily, what we're about is we build bridges between the LGBT community. Think of it as LGBTQ individuals, their families, and the church. Too often, when young men and women come out as being lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, or today queer, when they come from conservative Christian families, oftentimes creates tremendous tension in the family. And also we see many, too many kids, I say kids, really ages 17 to 52. I mean, we encounter a lot of walk away from the faith. And so that's something that just broke our heart. And we ourselves have a gay son, Greg Jr. We learned that he was gay 17 years ago. And if you could have responded wrong, we did. Mm-hmm. We've spent a long time mending those fences and working with literally hundreds of Christian families around the country who have lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender children.
Wow.
Yeah.
We so appreciate learning about your ministry. And right. For our members, they may not know that that's also been a part of our journey. Mm-hmm. We have a son, Evan, that came out, 4 years after, he was married for 4 years.
Right.
And then went through a divorce. And then came out right before the divorce happened. So it's been part of our journey, and we ended up finding out about Greg and Lynn's book and picked it up. I literally inhaled it in one night. There's not a lot written out there from the parenting perspective, and I so appreciated it. And Mark and I decided to actually interview these guys because when you go through something as unexpected as what that, you know, becomes when you have a child that announces to you that they are different than what you thought and that they struggle with this part of their lives, there's not a whole lot of direction on what to do. And so we so appreciated that, but we thought, let's talk with these guys because they've navigated a lot in parenting. So what has that done to their marriage? What are lessons right. learned along the way? And that's really what we want to talk about today. So mm-hmm. thanks for being willing to do that, Greg and Lynn.
We're happy to.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anything we can do to help someone else on this journey, just to give them hope and just recognize that it may not have been the story that you would have liked written for your child, but it is the story that is being written. So how, you know, again, how do you navigate that? And 17 years ago, there was absolutely nothing out there. And so we wrote the book with that in mind, that we, what we would have wished we could have read from somebody else's journey that we could share with others. So
that's one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And what I loved about your book is really, I mean, it comes down to whether you agree or you disagree, the call is still the same.
Yeah.
And that is to love.
Yeah.
And that's certainly what we have learned in this journey. But it's not been easy. And there have been times that it has affected the marriage relationship and all of that. So
yeah.
So let's dive into that a little bit. Let's just talk about your marriage in general. You know, when we talked before interview, we actually talked about the fact that, or you guys shared with us that you had been through 10 years of marriage counseling. Yeah, so talk about that. Talk yeah. about that, because what? We probably have as well.
Oh, I know.
They weren't 10 consecutive years, but
right.
we can probably say very close to the same thing. And we just celebrated 36 years last week. So we totally resonate with that. But talk to us about that.
Sure. Well, you know, so we were just kind of bored in our marriage and looking for something to do. And that's why we started counseling. So.
It was our favorite date night.
Yeah.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. It was not.
Right.
But.
So in a short time like this, I'll start by just kind of giving you a Reader's Digest version. So as Lynn mentioned, you know, we were married. Lynn was 18. I was 20 years old when we got married, and neither one of us knew about Jesus. Well, I shouldn't say that. Lynn grew up in a Catholic church, so she had that faith, but it wasn't a personal thing. And I really grew up more kind of unchurched. And but we were both in our mid-20s when we came to know about Jesus, which was a beautiful thing. Unfortunately, by that point in our marriage, it was 7 years into our marriage, and a lot of water had passed under the bridge, so to speak. And I'm silencing a phone. Apologize.
I just heard it going humming.
Oh, geez.
Okay.
So by that point, though, a lot of water had passed under the bridge. And as you know, when you accept Jesus, it doesn't make everything perfect, does it?
No.
Didn't in our case either. But it was actually on our 10th wedding anniversary, 3 years later, we were out celebrating. We were in downtown Detroit. At the time, we were living in Detroit, Michigan. And we were in downtown Detroit at one of our favorite restaurants, little corner booth. And we were just finishing up dinner. And Lynn said, wow, I just can't believe all we've been through. By this point, we had lost a child through a miscarriage. We had two children. We both came to know Christ. A lot of things that came forward. And she said, I just can't believe all we've been through. She said, I think that I could handle just about anything. And then she looked at me and she said, unless, of course, you had an affair. And when she said that, I paused and she saw the pause. And
can't even silence it on the computer.
You know, let me do this. I apologize, but I'm going to turn everything off, as I possibly should have a while ago. I apologize.
It's real life. This is real
yeah,
life.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, anyways, so I paused, and Lynn started crying, and the rest was history. It was a couple days later, and I was in my office, and I had the radio on just kind of quietly in the background. And I was listening to a Christian radio program where you can call in and ask questions. And anyways, as I'm sitting at my desk working, I hear in the background, I hear, and we'll be right back after this message with Lynn from Brighton. And I'm thinking, Brighton, we just moved to Brighton, Michigan. And I turn around, I look at the radio, I'm like, no way.
And, it was me.
they came back with a message, and it was my Lynn on the phone. And it didn't take her long before she was just crying and telling her story. And just how tragic it was. And that's really kind of what catapulted us into doing some Christ-centered marital counseling that extended over a period of 12 years. And on and off. But, you know, I mean, as you know, counseling's expensive. You know, we refinanced the house. We sold the car just to pay for it. We didn't have any finances at the time to speak of. And we were both really fortunate in that we wanted it to work.
Yes.
We all know people that aren't as fortunate, where their marriage ends up on the rocks, and one of the couples, one of the spouses wants to work at it, and the other one has given up, and you say, no, I'm done. So we were fortunate that we both wanted to go through it. And we were also fortunate in that we were able to find a couple of really great Christian counselors who worked with us over that period of time.
Wow.
That's awesome.
I really want to pull out what you said there, because you said it kind of quick and I want people to catch it. You knew you needed help, and the only way you could get help was Christian counseling, and you made sacrifices for that to happen.
Right.
You refinanced a house and sold a car.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think a lot of times people we're not willing to sacrifice and do what it takes. And man, that's some pretty big sacrifices there. But it helped you to get past that dark season in your marriage and to be able to say, today, we've been married for 42 years.
Yeah. I think the other thing is that you wanted to make it work.
Yeah.
And so often, that's not the norm. That people don't want to make it work. They don't want to do the hard work to make it work.
Or I would add, I think sometimes there's a hopelessness, because you experienced that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when you want to make it work, you have to have just a little bit of hope. So talk about that for a minute. Did either one of you ever struggle, Lynn, especially you maybe being on the receiving side of this news, did you ever feel hopeless at all, or was it that little bit of hope that kept you going, believing this is going to be okay?
I did have hope. And one of the, it's just that it was confusing, because if you could imagine having dinner that night and saying, the only thing that I would ever think about that maybe I wouldn't be able to work through is an affair. And having your husband tell you that he had an affair, it was like, well, did he want it to work? Because he's just telling me, I just told him that it was the thing that would probably have us get divorced. And I'm thinking he might want to have a divorce. So there was a lot of processing going on. But the first person I turned to was not my oldest friend, but one of my Christian friends, who was actually a Christian mentor. And I think that said a lot too, because one of my oldest friends is not a Christian. And so I knew that what her response would probably be, which is, you know, get rid of the guy. I mean, I can't believe he did that. Why did he do that? So I, in my heart, wanted it to make it work. I just didn't know how. And so going to my Christian friend, who allowed me just to share my pain with her, and not that she was going to fix it, but that she would pray for me, that she would give me biblical guidelines of, you know, how to help that along.
Reconcile. Yeah.
And reconcile was really what I wanted. And so that was the first step. At the same token, that also caused a rift because when I told Greg that I told, her name was Jan, when I told Jan, Greg was upset because he did not want that known, and he was afraid of how that was going to, how they were going to respond.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and
absolutely.
So.
You know, from the time I met Lynn, I met Lynn in junior high. And from the time I met her, I was smitten by her. And I just, I felt hard for Lynn. And I desperately wanted it to work. The reality is, several months after we were married, I had an indiscretion that took place in the backseat of the car for a few minutes. I carried that with me for 7 years until I met Christ. And when I met Christ, that was one of the things I laid at his feet. And it was a huge relief off my back. But fast forward 3 years later, when Lynn asked the question, at this point, I was a believer. I couldn't lie to her. I knew it would break her heart. But I simply had to tell her the truth.
Yeah.
Wow. Very scary moment.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the things we talk about in our book, No More Perfect Marriages, is that one of the God tools that really helps us to kick the perfection infection out of our marriage is the God tool of courage.
Yeah.
And that's really, you gathered up your courage and you were honest. And certainly there was fallout to be expected. There were some consequences, broken trust. Yep. But none of it was impossible.
Yeah.
Well, you know what Lynn said too, about me being angry. I was really upset that she had told our good friends. And I said, oh my gosh, they're going to hate me. And it just so happens that we saw them the next night. And I remember pulling up in front of their house, and they were both out on the porch kind of waiting for us. And they did exactly the opposite of what I thought they would do. They came alongside me. They hugged me. They loved me. And I was completely blown away by what was their Christ-like behavior. I was not.
Yeah. And I was mad at that. I was like, no, he doesn't deserve a hug. Exactly. I deserve his hug.
Exactly.
You know, but, you know, it. To be honest with you, you know, now that I look back at it, and it's been many, many years, it was just, it was worth the pain to go through to get to where we are today, because our marriage is stronger and more resilient to obstacles that come your way. And in regards to having a gay son, I mean, that in a lot of ways, it prepares you. It gives you an opportunity to see that just because you're experiencing something painful doesn't mean that it has to end poorly, that it can end well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that struck me as you were just explaining what it was like to pull into your friend's driveway, and they were waiting for you, and they hugged you, and they welcomed you, isn't that exactly what you are doing with the gay community now?
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful picture of that. And it was modeled for you in this very broken place in your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So interestingly though, we didn't do that with our son. when we learned about Greg Jr. being gay, we confronted him. And we said, listen, Greg, there's nothing that you could do that would stop us from loving you. So our words in front were right. But we went on, and I specifically said, but we need to get you fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody's ever made you feel like a project, that normally doesn't end well, does it?
No.
Right.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. Yeah. So we didn't get out of the gate very well with Greg Jr. And we started using the Bible as a tool, as a weapon, to kind of beat Greg and beat his friends. And eventually, well, it didn't take real long. Inside of a couple of years, they stopped coming around, and we realized we had lost influence or voice in our child's life. Our child, who we would throw ourselves in front of a bus for, here we had lost voice because we were too busy judging him. We were playing the role of the Holy Spirit rather than loving him unconditionally as Christ would.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how did you redeem that?
It's a great question, Mark. You know, what happened was we started spending a lot of time in the Gospels and just started looking at Jesus, who he was, who he hung out with, how he treated people, and what he had to say. And it became very clear to us what our role was, and we weren't doing a very good job at it. Mm. So we very, very focused on trying to simply love Greg where he was and love his friends. Our pastor, Ed Dobson, had encouraged us to make sure that we not only love Greg, but love his friends in the gay community. And that proved to be really, really beneficial. Greg kept us at arm's length for a while, and I'm guessing maybe a year or so, because like it sounded good, but he needed to see us in action to see if it was really real. And over time, not only did Greg want to start spending time with us again, but his friends did. Mm-hmm. And to this day, we possibly have upwards of a dozen men and women that are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender who refer to us as McMom and McDad. Many of them have been kicked out of their homes by their Christian families and have turned to us and said, hey, would you be my adopted parents? Mm-hmm. And that doesn't happen unless you know you're busy working on love them. So
yeah.
Getting back to your question too of how did you redeem that? It wasn't like we went out with a special kind of we didn't go out with that in mind. It was really God changing our hearts.
Absolutely.
To see things a little differently than what we thought was originally the right way to
have a relationship.
Yes, sure. To have a relationship. And so what happened was it was amazing because, you know, you try one thing and well, that didn't work. You tried another thing and that didn't work. And what it came down to was just recognizing that God was doing his work behind the scenes without even in the midst of us doing it wrong. And so, but by the time when we started to love and do less judging, especially me, because I was the Bible preaching mama, it was amazing because people were really interested, the LGBT community were more interested in even hearing us and listening to us and so we see the LGBT community in so much in a different way now that they're growing in their relationship with the Lord. Whereas we were pushing them away before.
Yeah.
And it was just, it's really sort of interesting to see how that happens.
Yeah.
Love. And I think
one of the things that happens is we have, as you're talking through this, I think as parents, we confuse accepting a child with agreeing with a child.
Right.
And accepting them mm-hmm. is accepting their reality. Right. So both of our sons struggle with, have the reality, excuse me, of same-sex attraction. And so that is their reality. And we've had to come to the place of accepting that's his reality. Mm-hmm. But that may be different. And whether it's this issue or it's other issues, it may be different than agreeing with them. Mm-hmm. And that's really a place that we've had to come to understand. But boy, what you're saying there is the accepting is the bridge building. Because then it does give you a voice into their life. It mm-hmm. does, and you pray for those moments when truth can be shared or a question can be asked that just helps them to think a little bit more, or a scripture can be shared that you know, really, it's not our job. I think it's Billy Graham, you guys had this in your book. Billy Graham said, it's God's job to judge, it's the Holy Spirit's job to convict, and it's our job to love. Yeah. And boy, that's, we've certainly found that as well.
You know, interesting too, that when our marriage crashed, we both looked to Jesus, and had he not been the focal point of what we were trying to do, we're both confident we wouldn't be here today. But one of the things it did was it really helped pave the way for us for the future, because as you know, life is full of all kinds of unexpected turns. When our daughter was in high school, she developed anorexia, a very bad case of anorexia. And we found ourselves in a very similar position where, in fact, I had a friend say, "McDonald, I wish I had your faith." And I'm like, "Really?" when you run out of options and your back is against the wall, you have no other place other than to fall into Jesus' arms, right? And that's what happened. And that's really what got us through Connie's anorexia. It's what got us through Greg Jr. and his same-sex attraction.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
You know, you made a comment more related to your son, but that so often when we don't know what to do, we can default to judgment and to condemnation, to blame. And I think we see that a lot in marriage as well, that when a man or a woman doesn't know what to do in their marriage, they default to change. And if I can change you, we'll be better. And it's all your fault, that kind of thing. What have been the challenges that have raised up within your marriage that God has had to lead you through?
Well, again, talking about blame, when Greg Jr., when we found out Greg Jr. was gay, you immediately look at yourself and you look at your husband or your spouse. And so I immediately blamed him for not being around enough, not doing more guy things. And if he would have, you know, done this or that, Greg wouldn't be gay. And the opposite happened. He said, "Lynn, if you weren't such a doting mother and, you know, just being
overbearing,
right? Yeah, overbearing, there you go, yeah. Overbearing, then Greg Jr. wouldn't be gay." And but again, we went to our pastor with that, and he said, Ed Dobson, and he had told us, you know, you are going to look in the mirror, but don't stay there long because nothing good comes from it. And that was really, really good advice, because I didn't stay there that long in that process. Unfortunately, my husband did. Mm. And that was not a good thing.
Yeah, so I found myself between me beating myself up. So, you know, when you have a major trauma in your life, it's pretty common to spend time looking in the mirror. And so I could see faults within myself that were very damaging. One of the things that God revealed to me about myself through this whole process was that I was that Christian, you know this guy, I was that Christian who had all the answers. I had an answer for most everything, and most everything fit in one of my neat little tidy boxes. And then God trusted us with the situation of having a gay child. And all of a sudden, I didn't have answers, and things didn't fit in my neat little box. And life became very, very messy. And I viewed myself as being somewhat responsible. And then Lynn helped me understand that I was responsible.
Yeah.
And I had a family member suggest that I had better get a handle on my kid, that again, it was my fault. And I found myself one afternoon, I was driving my car from Detroit, Michigan, back to Grand Rapids, Michigan. It's a long straight stretch of highway, about 100 miles. And I was having a pity party. And I could see in the distance, it was possibly maybe a mile and a half away or so, a bridge. And I decided that I was going to call it quits. And as I approached the bridge, I was going to yank the wheel and go into the bridge. like a millisecond away, I kind of snapped out of it and pulled over on the side of the highway, called my physician, and went in and saw him and quickly got on some depression medication.
Yes.
But the point though is that it's so easy to beat ourselves up, and you know, the fact is we're not perfect, and we try so hard to be perfect, and so much of our churches, from my perspective, you know, we push hard on that. By the time we get to church on Sunday, everybody's looking just fine, and you know, we're all dialed up, and you know, and yet, you know, we know the conversation in the car telling the kids to be quiet and shut up, and you know, all the other stuff that's going on as we're trying to get to church on time, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, that's what I call the perfection infection. Mm-hmm. And then we're perfect. We talk about that in all the No More Perfect books. We have No More Perfect Moms, No More Perfect Kids, and No More Perfect Marriages. And the perfection infection is when we have unrealistic expectations of ourselves and we unfairly compare ourselves to others. Mm-hmm. And it becomes really dangerous. But then when it invades our parenting, we have unrealistic expectations of our kids and we unfairly compare our kids to others. And that certainly plays out in the journey you've had with your son, in our journey with our son as well. But I think, you know, because we are worried about what people are going to think. I mean, you're, mm-hmm. you know, Greg, when you didn't want her to tell her friend Jan, you were concerned about the perfection infection. What are people going to think?
Right.
And then what that does is it isolates us.
Right.
It keeps us.
And in reality, the opposite happens.
Yes.
Being authentic and sharing your struggles actually draws people closer to you because they recognize that they have things that they are struggling with too, and you'll be honest with them and that you're real and you're not perfect, so you're safe.
Yeah. Talk just for a moment before we bring this to a close, but just talk about marriage being a team, because I think when you were just talking about the blame, and then, you know, Greg, you were owning the blame and she was throwing the blame, certainly you guys weren't being a team at that point. And I think we all struggle with that at some point in time in our marriage journey, but what has God, you know, shown you about that?
Well, one of the things that we have come up with in our marriage is that when there is an argument or maybe a disagreement that's going on, one of us will say politely to the other, you know, look, I'm not your enemy. We're a team. And Satan is our enemy, and he comes to want to destroy our marriage. So yes, I mean, we have a difference of opinion here, but remember, you know, we can work this out as a couple.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, okay, you know, I'm on your team. I'm Team Greg and Lynn, you know?
Yeah.
That's right. Let's try to figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
With Greg Jr., I felt like when we really started to get on the right track, one of the things was we said we'd have three absolutes, and one was we were going to love God, we were going to love Greg Jr., and we were going to love each other.
Mm-hmm.
And we fell hard on that sword, because as you know, it's so easy to have any number of things want to. And Satan loves to put a wedge in between that, right? Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, you know, the Bible talks a lot about our flesh, and I think our flesh wants to reject and to judge, and that spirit that's built up in Christ is called to love. And boy, that's quite a journey of learning how to love in the midst. And God uses those hard seasons to really teach us how to love and to deepen that love within us. Mm-hmm. And I definitely see that in you guys.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, it's been a great conversation. We always close out our interviews with one question, and that question is, what's your favorite date night activity? We find that we learn so much from each other and we get ideas. So what would you say?
Go ahead.
So Lynn and I are foodies. I spent 30 years in the food industry, and I like to say that we know where to find good food, and if we don't, we know where to buy it and how to make it. So we love to find a great little restaurant. I love to find a great little quiet restaurant that has fabulous food and have a quiet evening between the two of us.
I love that.
Very cool.
Would you add anything, Lynn?
Yeah, I guess, you know, one of my favorite, living in West Michigan, water was normally pretty close. So we both love being near the water, and we would go up. We have to find a water source here.
Not a lot of water.
Not so much water. Yeah, in Atlanta. But I would love to do like a picnic where we just take a blanket and have a picnic, and you know, on the beach or near water. But that would be just, you know, the two of us to be able to talk and without the distractions of family or work or things like that. But that's one of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Agreed. I find water is very relaxing.
Yeah, me too. So. And food. Jill and I do adventure dining where we try to find different places that we've never eaten before, you know, and that's been really fun.
Yeah, that's our current date night activity. We learned that from a couple that we interviewed.
Yeah.
And we loved the concept, adventure dining. You cannot go out to eat somewhere you've been before.
Yeah.
So
that's a good idea.
We've had some fun with that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Some have been scary, but not too many. And we've survived, so it's been good.
I love that. Yeah. Well, you guys, thank you so much for joining us. We're so grateful for the honest conversation.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate being here.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and this is Mark and Jill Savage, along with Greg and Lynn McDonald, signing off with a reminder that a real marriage is not perfect. A real marriage is two people being perfected. Thanks for joining us.